are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're heard on the World Wide Web all over the United States and all over the world on Sita Media. So go ahead, Ellen. Yes, tell them how to catch us.
That's right. 1510wwbc.com has all of our shows archived by date. So you just have to select the date that you'd like to listen to, and you'll be able to download those or utilize those shows just to re-listen or to use for marketing if you'd like to do that. And also, all of our shows are also posted on our Facebook page, which is SitaMediaInc.com. And also, Sita kind of floats them over to her page, too. So if you're friends with Sita on social media, you'll be able to get all of the shows. And 12 years worth. Unbelievable.
That's right.
You figure two guests a week, 52 weeks times 12 years. That's a lot of great, fantastic people of unscripted shows, fun, educational. And we learned a lot over the last few years.
Well, you know, it's kind of nice to have a show when your heart's in the right place. And like I always tell people, you know, we sit here on Mondays and this studio has become an extension of my living room. It's kind of like if my husband would allow it, I would probably move the studio into that big old house, but he won't.
He won't.
So we just pay for this room here. 1 hour on Mondays costs as much as some people pay for their rent,
right?
Or whatever. And it's okay. It's great. The good Lord provides the sponsors for us who supports our shows. And I am blessed to have wonderful people that come my way. And so we sit here and we have terrific conversations every Monday about issues, things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. And we talk about things that are going on around the world, around the nation. And for me, it's always been stuff about public education, the environment, you know,
public
child
housing,
care, public health, affordable housing. We are our zip codes, but we need help. Mm-hmm. And for that, we have two great guests today. We have my friend Katrina is here, and she's going to be talking, Katrina Hudson. I always think of you when I say Katrina Hudson. I know there's a singer by that last name too, right? Yeah. So Katrina Hudson is here, and Katrina is she works with the Office of Student Engagement for Hillsborough County Schools. She's going to be talking the second segment about a whole bunch of stuff, and mostly behavior, right?
Absolutely.
Proactive and reactive.
Yes.
What do we do for our students?
More preventative than reactive.
Yeah, and so I'm grateful that you're here. And on the phone, we have someone who's calling in from Oregon.
Oregon.
I always think of oregano.
I know you do.
Why does that Trinidadian accent come out, right? Oregon. So Chauvin Scott is called. She's on the phone, and she's going to be talking to us about a book that she wrote about the minds of mass killers, understanding and interrupting the pathway to violence. And I have to say, I went on her website, and I looked at the book, and when it was released, and it really makes you think about all the school shootings we've had in Parkland, Florida. It makes you think about what happened in Aurora. Mm-hmm. And I think her aim is to help people and their minds before they get to that point and help us to understand what triggers this, what happens to a person to cause them to pick up an assault rifle or a knife or whatever it is and hurt another human being. And she's on the phone, and I don't want to take too much time, but I'm going to ask her to tell us a little bit about herself. So Chauvin, thank you for taking the time to call in.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And it's Siobhan. I realize it's
Siobhan.
A bit of an unusual name.
Siobhan.
But that's okay.
It's very,
I get
very.
And I,
it's exotic, Siobhan.
Just, it's an Irish name, not always seen in America.
Yes, yes. And you know, like my name is Sita, and people sometimes will say Sita with a D instead.
Of course.
And I've learned to just accept whatever, but I prefer to say Siobhan. Siobhan Scott. It's beautiful.
Okay.
So tell.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about myself and my motivation for writing the book. I've been a mental health therapist for 30 years now, and during that time, I've worked with thousands of clients who have been victims or perpetrators of violence in various ways. And so much of these crimes are preventable. I've become very passionate about violence prevention. But often it's not preventable because we don't understand it. We don't know what to do. And I get very frustrated every time there's one of these events. And I see social media and the news media filled with myths. And I think because of my background, I know a little bit more probably than the average person. And I just felt a compelling need to say, come on, these are the facts. This is what's going on. And as a society, we need to do better. We can save lives.
Well, you know, you're right about social media and cable news, right? Everybody has become an analyst overnight. The political
right.
pundits are so many, and it's all about the ratings, and it's all
exactly.
and it's all about, you know, the to sensationalize something and go with whatever is going to bring in the most revenue for that news station at that point.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
And I think a lot of us see through it, and a lot of us understand that's what's happening. So I am grateful for people like you who are able to sit down and say, wait a minute, this is not true. Let's go
right.
deeper and see what's happening. So how long did it take you to write the book?
You know, as I say, it's been 30 years of accumulated knowledge and study, but it actually took me 2 full years, about 20 hours a week, to compile all that into the book.
Well, we have in the studio with us today a friend of ours, Katrina Hudson, and she's probably going to jump in when she can because she deals with a lot
sure.
of behaviors of students at the Hillsborough County Schools here in Florida. And mm-hmm. so to take us into the mind of what we all watch what happened here in Florida at Parkland. And everybody,
right.
and the first thing, you know, everybody wants to know how many are dead, what's a casualty, did the police
right.
respond in time, who is going to be held responsible. Right away, they want to, the school officials, they want to see if the principal is he available to talk about administration, what went wrong. But take mm-hmm. us into something like that. It's like people want to have a blame game at that point. And no one
right.
wants to take responsibility and be held accountable for something like this, a mass shooting. So take us into, like, your mind when you see something like this. What do you say? What do you say at that point?
Well, you know, one of the big myths is that these killings are senseless. And in fact, they're never senseless. They always make sense in the mind of the killer. The problem is people don't know enough psychology and don't have access to the right information to understand what's going on in the mind of the killer. And there are many myths. The fact that they're senseless, the fact that we don't know why. In fact, forensic mental health research, the FBI, the Secret Service, hundreds of academics, scholars in forensics all know why this is happening. It's very well documented. But one of the primary myths that we hear, aside from senseless, is that the person just snapped. In fact, there's a pathway to violence that's well documented. It may go on for weeks, months, even years with some perpetrators. It begins with grievances, and this is where a person begins to blame others for often imaginary slights, for things that go wrong in their lives, and they pick out a target. It's either people who are of another race or ethnicity, it's immigrants, it's women in many cases now, but the person accumulates grievances, focuses on grievances, and projects their own life problems onto other people, that other people are doing things to me. The fantasy life begins to take over, and they become fascinated with violent retribution. They move from the fantasy to planning, And then eventually that moves into an actual breach and attack for those who follow through. Now, of course, many people accumulate grievances and have fantasies about violence. Most do not progress to actually planning, accumulating weapons, accumulating body armor, and all the things that we see mass killers do. So, of course, the goal is to interrupt this long before anybody starts the planning phase and picks up a weapon. But the increasingly in the last 5 years, the motivations have been fame-seeking because of the fame that they can get on the Internet, which is very easy to do. There are actually websites which have been dedicated to mass killers, and we call the process gamification, where they actually admire each other and try to outdo kill scores, very much like what you see with video game competitions.
Yeah.
So they rank each other. And this is a very perverse way of looking at the world, but there are literally millions of people who think this way, and these are usually very angry young men.
Right.
So that's sort of the process.
So what are some of the common red flags? Because, you know, like, we're living in a time right now where we see such a divided nation and a divided world, in that there's so much hatred and racism and bigotry and division and really and truly fear. I mean, I was watching television yesterday, was it, or the day before, with the synagogue in Texas.
Yes.
And, you know, me being a person of color, a woman of color, my ethnicity, I'm Indian. I know, have a lot of Islamic friends. I have a lot of friends from all over the world. And one of my friends said, "Oh God, I hope it's not a Muslim," because you know what's going to happen right after, you know, the backlash, the hatred, you know, and right away, you know, everybody wants to know if it's a if it's domestic terrorism or international terrorism involved or whatever.
Right.
And so we live in this world where we want to know the red flags ahead of time. Like, how do you prevent someone who is sitting there planning to attack innocent people who are praying?
Right. The best way is to intervene early on the pathway, because happy people who have connected positive relationships in their lives, who are basically enjoying their life, have a reason to live, and that is not the people that we're talking about. So the earlier in life we can intervene with young people, the better, so that they don't ever move into these communities of hate. But most people who do these acts now have been very active in internet communities, where they've become fascinated with hate rhetoric. They may not always formally affiliate with hate groups, but they're fascinated with these topics, and they begin that projection process of demonizing people that are different from themselves. Other red flags are a fascination with other murderers, and you see this with a lot of the high school killers who have become fascinated with Nazis, Charles Manson, Adolf Hitler, Tim McVeigh. They become fascinated with weapons and bombs. They experiment with bomb making, accumulating weapons, accumulating body armor, you know, gear of war. Very often they're spreading hateful rhetoric and their blame on their social media accounts. And so it's very important that parents and law enforcement know what's happening with people on social media. And if people are veering into these dark areas, that's when we need to intervene. Particularly, we call it leakage, if they're joking about mass killings, if they're joking about becoming the next school shooter, as the Parkland young man did on his YouTube account. We need to take these things seriously. It's called leakage. And one of the phrases that we use over and over is "see something, say something."
I was just going to say, we've had our sheriff on our show many times, and that's what they tell us, you know, if you see something, say something. So we have to tell our listeners, we're speaking with author Siobhan Scott.
I'm Irish, so she's Irish.
It's so exciting. Siobhan Scott, and she's talking with us about a book that she wrote called "The Minds of Mass Killers: Understanding and Interrupting the Pathways to Violence." So it's more about when you see something, you say something, and if God, if we can catch it early enough, we can probably alter the course of someone's life.
Definitely.
And I have a
question. That's what it's all about, right? Is the support that you would give someone, and the counseling, the mental health therapy, to see a therapist such as yourself.
Yes, and if we can get more therapists supporting the public school staff, I think teachers right now and academic counselors are absolutely overwhelmed. And so we need to do a lot of this. When we say, why is this happening in America? We're all responsible. It's coming from our culture. It's coming from the way we venerate warriors. We promote violence in so much of our culture. Masculinity is associated with guns and firearms, and in our media, in movies, even minor problems are solved with gunfire, and so this is a very toxic culture in so many ways, and we all have responsibility for changing that. Another thing that I'll mention is that one of the myths is that all mass killers are mentally ill. Only about 10% have severe and chronic mental illness, something like schizophrenia that causes hallucinations and delusions. The majority have certain personality factors, which I go through in the book, the five different personality traits that are often found in mass killers. And it's just important that we catch these things early. There have been women married to men who have gone on to do workplace shootings, and the women now come back and say, oh, I saw all these signs with him. I saw these things for years. He talked about shooting his boss for years. It's like, okay, we can't just assume that a person is not going to act. We should always intervene.
Well, words matter, right?
Absolutely. And I thought it was really a cool. This is Ellen, by the way, Siobhan. It's nice to have you on the show. I saw a really tight correlation with your two books, actually. The game addiction book is something that I've been talking about for quite a long time. I remember, as kids, we were never allowed. We had screen time. We had like an hour of screen time, and there was a regulation around it. And you could pick. You could pick TV. You could pick a screen. You could pick. We didn't have phones back then, but something along those lines. And I really think from a correlation standpoint, from that game, the game addiction piece to even this mass murder book that you have, the mass killer book, I really see the emotional intelligence is what's failing is because we're not teaching, people, the kids are seeing that people fly off the handle on TV shows, fly off the handle in public. We're supposed to be political, educated people that are having.
And it doesn't help either that we have politicians that talk about China, but they don't talk about the video games that the American kids are addicted to that the Chinese made.
Exactly.
So you really she said, the blame is everybody's blame. And I think Katrina wants to jump in here too. I'm holding a minute, Siobhan. I know she's got something to say. Go for it.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I'm over here just about to jump out of my seat.
I can feel it.
Everything. I just love what you spoke about, Siobhan, as far as our solution, because I know we spend a lot of time talking about what's wrong. And we need to do a whole better job of concentrating and focusing on what we can do better to improve the situation. And of course, prevention is where it's at. A classroom teacher can tell you, we've had concerns about kids that have come through our classroom doors for quite a while that we've always kind of questioned and had concerns about, and we weren't able to really pinpoint what those things are. And we have so many of our kids who have what we call those ACEs, those adverse childhood experiences, where some of them are on the lighter side when you're talking about, poverty and divorce and some things where they viewed or have been witness to some very cruel and some egregious things. And so how can we get in front of that when we know that these things are going to happen? How can we prevent, behaviors to get as egregious as the ones that you're speaking of, and a lot has to happen with that prevention, with having those conversations, reaching out with mental health. That mental health piece is huge right now. Our babies have been held tight, and we've been in quarantine, and we haven't been able to have access to our teachers in the way that we normally have been able to have access to them. And so we're starting to see a lot of those behaviors are spiking. One of the most things that really came out to me is about the increase of domestic violence has been homes where parents have taken away their child's cell phone, and the child has actually attacked their parents, and they have domestic charges on them, you know, as a, you know, middle and high school student, simply because they attacked their parent because their parent was trying to put their foot down and took a cell phone away.
That's something we should talk about. We're seeing more children more violent, right, Siobhan?
Yes. And even years ago, I have seen a case where a 15-year-old boy whose mother could not get him off the computer video game, she unplugged the computer and he decked her. He physically assaulted her. Technology has gotten out of control. It's developed far faster than we have had the wisdom to know what to do about it. And this is an incredibly important piece of what's going wrong. And yeah, I have a client who tried to take the cell phone away from her daughter at midnight, and the daughter did a suicide attempt. You know, I mean, there are so many red flags that there's so much wrong. And mass killings are just one horrible part of what's happening right now with young people. And we've all got to work on changing it and giving teachers, school administrators, and parents tips and support and education and guidance.
You know, one of the things that a lot of us are watching, I mean, I'm now over 55, and I remember my mother parenting, you know, they had 18 children, my father and mother combined. And there was a time when we could respect our elders and we listened to our elders, and we knew that they came to us with a vast amount of knowledge and wisdom and guidance. And so we listened. But we're finding in today's world, so many young adults and children and students, they don't want to have anything to do with the elders and the parents who could give them that guidance. How do we get back to that place where America did have the elderly respected and people listened to them?
Boy, that's a big one. I think that's about a 2-hour topic, right?
Yes.
I think in many ways we're seeing a social breakdown, you know, with buzz all over social media about civil war is coming and the political polarization and the rage. There is just a lot of work to do ahead. Life is never boring because, you know, there's always someone we can connect with on a heart-to-heart level and at least make, you know, if we can't fix the big picture, we can at least make a therapeutic connection with the people around us. And that may be the best any one of us can do, but that's important.
Right. So give our listeners here, tell us where we can find your books and where someone can find you, because you also do a lot of public speaking and you do lectures and things like that. So I'm sure people who are listening would want to contact you.
Sure. The book can be ordered wherever books are sold, any bookseller, certainly available on Amazon. The publisher is McFarland, so it can be ordered from their website as well. But any bookseller can order it. And I have a website. It's psiobhanscott.com or themindsofmasskillers.com. We'll also get you there. And that has my contact information. It's fine to just email me at Siobhan, that's S-H-A-V-A-U-N, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at Gmail.
Right. Wow. It's so interesting. So we have like 30 seconds left before, 1 minute left, he says. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners that we right now with the COVID-19 and the lockdown and the mental health that we're all seeing happening all over the world, all of us, we can't hug, we can't kiss, we can't do things. What can you tell our world to make people feel like, listen, we've all got to be positive? What can we do to help our young adults?
Yeah, exactly. I think because when we're under stress, none of us are usually our best selves. You know, we're not coming from our compassionate heart so much of the time. And I think we can all monitor our own mood state and find ways to soothe ourselves and find that sense of peace and then spread that. You know, one of the things I mention in the book is we need to learn how to talk so people will listen and listen so people will talk and make those heart-to-heart connections. And even if we do that in just a small way, we're creating a better world.
Wow. I would love to have you back on sometime during the year, too. I mean, it's just that I think right now our world need positive energy so that all of us can heal, because we're in this together. We have to reset this pandemic and reset our economy together so that we could have a thriving world for our grandchildren, ourselves, and the next generation.
And as
so
I've said before,
we're really grateful you took the time to call in, Siobhan Scott.
As I said before, thank when emotions you. Are high, intelligence is real low. So get educated about this. Get educated about and get into that logical brain so you can be a problem solver and not a problem finder. Because we've got plenty of problem finders. I know how to problem find.
Thank you, Siobhan. We really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break to listen to our sponsors here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Just stay tuned. We'll be back in just another few minutes.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9. That's Cloud number 9. furniture.com. again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, or dial is WWBC, and Ellen, they can hear us online everywhere.
Everywhere, 1510WWBC.com, and also on our SitaMediaInc.com, our website, as well as Facebook, and we post all of the shows after the show.
And I just want to say today is Dr. Martin Luther King's Day, and his favorite quote that I love is, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why people like myself remain an activist.
That's right.
In addition to everything else that I do, it's because I think when the good Lord calls me home one day, in Hinduism, I believe I'm going to be leaving on a golden chariot. I believe Lord Krishna is coming for me whenever. And I would like to say to him on my journey, wherever I'm going, hey, listen, I did my best. You know,
right.
So I think that's part of us having the show here and speaking to so many people and speaking about things that make such a difference. And if we want to change the world, we have to change our behaviors towards each other on this wonderful earthly journey called life. And so the second segment we have now, our friend Katrina Hudson is going to chat with us a little bit of herself and all the great stuff she's doing at the Hillsborough County Schools.
That's right.
All right.
So great to have you.
Great.
So tell us a little bit, because you are tell us about your title.
So my title at this time for Hillsborough Public Schools is the Office of Student Engagement, and I am the director there. So I have a general director who definitely has a great vision for what we're doing to make sure that what we're doing on campuses in our district is equitable, fair, and really preventable as much as we can.
And so is there one of you at every county school in Florida?
No, this position is kind of morphed. More of our districts, they actually have what's called an Office of Student Discipline. But our office actually works with kids preventively and also when they do things that are not so...
I feel like when you say Office of Discipline, it scares the kids.
Right.
But when you say you're going to the Office of Student Discipline, that carries a harsh meaning to it, right?
Absolutely.
But when you say you're going to the Office of Student Engagement.
Correct, because we look at the whole child. It's not just about what they've done wrong. We really look at the student, you know, as far as the whole child. We look at their grades. We're looking at you know, their age and where they are on their journey to graduation. It's not just about the incident that brought them to us. So it's actually one of the things that I like the most is that it's preventable. How can we get, you know, like we like to say, how can we drag that baby across the graduation stage? So we really try to get them to the point where they can get a diploma. Regardless of the behaviors that they've committed.
So Hillsborough County sounds like they're kind of reaching out and doing a little bit better than maybe some of the other, not to say that everybody's not doing a good job, but it sounds like Hillsborough County's being a little cutting edge.
Well, the idea itself is definitely cutting edge. We're trying to meet with parents and get them, you know, just make sure that we're educating everyone. It's not, you know, parents don't know what goes on in schools today. And we try to communicate with them in a way that they understand what's going on with their particular child. We try to give them options as how they can educate their child. And they walk away with a greater sense of their individual child and what they need to do.
You embody them,
forward.
Right? Well, it's like,
empowering
how can
parents,
a,
absolutely.
How can a parent teach empathy and compassion and love and engage their child in public service or in education if they themselves doesn't know how?
Right. And I think
the big question, I think, right?
That is definitely, and the fall of that answer truly has come because we have been so divisive. Everyone wants to point fingers as to what's wrong with our kids. And of course, high school blames middle school. Middle school blames elementary. Elementary blames the parents. You know, the schools blame the community. Community blames the schools. And so instead of pointing a finger and trying to find out who's to blame, let's just figure out what we need to do to make a better place for our kids. And that has always been part of every step that I've taken professionally and personally. I'm actually a product of Brevard right here.
Yeah.
Brevard Public Schools. And so I attended Saturn. I attended Clear Lake Middle School when it was middle school. And I graduated from Cocoa High. So Tiger Pride. Yeah.
And you have that phase where you're everybody's big sister and best friend. I mean,
I try.
Can you not smile when a kid comes into your office? I think it comes naturally. And what it does, right, it puts people at ease.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I've been told that more than once. And, you know, it's all about being, you know, it truly is who I am. And I think that positivity is a choice, and it's a choice that I make every day. And I think that, you know, no matter which position, you know, I've been a classroom teacher. I can empathize with what they're going through right now. You know, I've been an assistant principal. I can empathize with where they're going through right now. I was a principal for 10 years. I can empathize with them right now. And so I'm a parent. You know, I'm a community member. I basically have a 360 view of what's happening to our communities and how we can make them better. And we all have to take responsibility.
And so, I know you said you had a three-prong approach of
absolutely
doing this. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to step on everyone's toes.
Yeah, so go for it. Poke us.
Yeah, that's right.
So when it comes to the schools, I really see that, you know, we, you know, 21st century kids, right? We have 21st century kids. They are, you know, they are used to things quick. They're used to things, you know, being very,
immediate,
you know,
gratification.
Instantaneous. Yes.
Right. And so, but we are placing them in classrooms that they're asked to sit all day, every day. And these babies, this is why many of them, you know, they get into trouble. They, you know, I actually get off task if I'm asked to sit for a very long period of time. And so we really need to look at how we're engaging our kids in the classroom. And I know some of the struggles that they go through at this time. I know, and I know I'm going to step on everyone's toes. But really, we have to look at how we're engaging our students on a daily basis. And that 20th century mindset does not belong with our 21st century kids. And they can do a whole lot more right over their phone than some of the content that we're delivering to them right now. And so we need to look at.
So we need to change the way we see things.
Yeah. How we're delivering our content to our kids. So the other prong is, of course, is parents. You know, bring us kids who are ready to learn. Bring us kids that are going to be well behaved and disciplined. And that way, when a teacher has to communicate to a parent, it's not seen as I have to defend myself. You know, there is a time where whatever the adult said, that's what happened.
Right.
And that's no longer the case. You know, schools are taking all of this time to try to prove what they're saying to parents when our kids are misbehaving, instead of whatever the adult said is what happened. And so, you know, we're having to do these long investigations and trying to get all of these different things, you know, together to prove our case. When, you know, there's just misbehavior, and that same misbehavior is what they're privy to also. You know, kids don't come and just say, okay, I'm going to wait until this moment to start doing this behavior. You know, it's been something that's been allowed, and that's why they bring it to school, you know. And so that truly is, you know, the parents' piece is when parents are being called, when the school calls you, when the teacher calls you, and they're trying to tell you, you know, something about what's going on with your kid. Listen, return their phone calls. See how you can help, because that is truly one of the factors that will leverage the teacher in the classroom, is knowing that they have a supportive parent.
The communication.
I remember an illustration one time that it was a teacher and the parents and the kid. And the 20 years ago.
Yes.
Right? Remember?
Yes.
And the parent and the teacher were on the same side, and the kid was sitting on the other side of the desk, mm-hmm, by themselves. And
mm-hmm,
it was a united front. And now it's the parents sitting on the kid's side and poking at the teacher. And I used to say that all the time. I said, I remember when I would get in trouble in school, it wasn't that often, but I was in trouble before she even knew the story.
Right.
Just well, because we had to go up to the school, because obviously it was something
that
was
bad. It was a scary moment, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
You know what it is, too? Do you find that with COVID-19 and what we've all experienced the last 2 years, that there's more mental health challenges And we're seeing where some people actually did not respect the teachers, administrators, and schools enough. Because we're finding out that most people, a lot of people want the school system to be their babysitters.
Oh, absolutely. They bring them when they want them, when they want to bring them. And, you know, one of the things as principal I had to try to help my parents understand is that we don't have all subjects going on all day just because you're in the elementary school. You know, you don't hear bells on an elementary school campus, but we actually run a master schedule just like a middle and high school. So if you have reading from 8 to 9:30 every day, and you bring your child at 8:30 every day, you've missed a half hour of reading every single day of reading instruction. And over time, and then you wonder why they're not reading on grade level. Well, you're not bringing them to school on time because we don't catch up the baby as soon as they walk in the door and start the whole day all over. And so it's very important, you know, that we communicate what those concerns are.
Because, so time like management, said, not just for yes. the children, but for the parents.
Absolutely.
You know what's a teacher's worst nightmare is that parent running into the classroom with the kid late, disrupting the whole class.
Absolutely.
And I mean, and how do we get parents to actually parent and say, you brought this kid into the world and you are responsible for this child, for their well-being, for their food, clothes, bedtime stories, homework must be done, a good home, health insurance. How do we get parents to say, okay, education plays a great part in this?
In my experience, some of the ones that I really need to communicate that to, those parents didn't have positive educational lives themselves. And so we have to re-engage them to get to see another side of it because they themselves, you know, struggled through school. They did not have positive interactions at school. And so they bring that baggage with them with their child. And so they won't respond to, you know, to teacher phone calls. They won't respond to different things. And so we have to educate and we have to re-educate many times our parents to understand that, hey, we really need your support in this because we can't do it ourselves. And so, you know, the other part of it is, you know, I said I was stepping on everyone's toes, is community. And our community, we really need to, you know, I one of the things that I felt like was very instrumental in some of the successes that I've had with students and families is engaging the community, showing up at different events. You know, my babies need to see me. They need to see that I'm supporting what they're doing outside of school. And yes, we don't get paid for that. Yes, we don't. But I saw the importance of it and how it changed a lot of the culture and the climate on the campus when they know that, hey, you know, Miss Hudson is just, you know, just a step away. You know, she goes to the church right there on Fisk Boulevard. You know, she can be seen at the Cocoa High football game.
Because they identify
yes,
with you.
Yes, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
The funny thing is, too, is I live in Palm Bay, and I'm not in the house that I'm in now, but the house that I had before, there was a neighborhood, and a lot of the kids were in my neighborhood. And a lot of my neighbors were complaining that, you know, their cars were getting broken into, and there's some stuff that was happening. You know, my stuff never got touched. And it was because I had season tickets to the football game. I would be out playing with, you know, if I came home from school, from work or whatever, I would play basketball for, you know, 5-10 minutes out, nobody ever bothered my stuff.
But there shouldn't be.
And I don't know if it was the kids or not, right, but certainly.
Yeah. And there shouldn't be breaking into anybody's cars. They shouldn't have to be rewarded just, not to do the good right thing, right? But see, the thing is, I think what's happened with public education in the United States, and you're right, we've moved away from just public school to charter school. We have all these different kind of schools now, which everyone's come to understand, it's not a bad thing. People have choice, right? Schools of choice.
Absolutely.
And you should, parents should. But with the lockdown, we were saying earlier that a lot of children look towards the teacher for their mouths to give them that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen where the mask, in some cases, with these little tiny ones, the little one in kindergartens and stuff, it's hindered them a little bit with the learning.
Oh, absolutely. We have, you know, our kindergarten, first and second grade, those babies have not had a regular year, a traditional year yet. You know, those second graders, they were, you know, they lost that last quarter. And that last quarter for first graders and kindergartners is huge. You know, that's when, you know, after the holidays from January to May is when they show a lot of the growth. and they were shorted that growth, you know, because they were placed on computers. And so that way of learning and having to work around being separated from your friends and not being able to connect on that human level was definitely impacted. And so, you know, we have to find ways to, you know, to try to mitigate those situations, because some of these aren't going to go away. And I think our mindset is that we're waiting for something to end instead of trying to embrace what's going on, and let's see how we can work within this situation.
The framework.
Absolutely.
So what you're saying is, you know, like how, I mean, I was raised that in order to get ready for the morning, you have your outfit out that you're going to wear, your shoes, your clothes, structure, whatever. So we should all now say, okay, here's my mask for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Make it part of your daily routine right now until we know better. And for the little ones, they'll have to, the teachers will have to change a little bit when the time comes to help them, because I really can't see how those little ones are sitting there not knowing what the teacher is, because a smile means a lot to a kid when
Absolutely.
He's struggling with reading or writing,
Absolutely.
Right?
And especially when they're learning their sounds. When they're learning their letters and sounds, they're looking at the teacher's mouth and seeing how she's making those, or he or she is making those movements to be able to make those sounds and basically put those sounds back out. And so, you know, they are definitely struggling with that.
Right.
And they really haven't had an opportunity to truly be, you know, what we always see is that the traditional kindergarten, first grade, where you're having all of those different things, when you're learning with your friends and you're being very close, you're having a lot of circle time. And so now they're being placed at tables, and desks where they're separated from their peers. And so they're not having the same experience that we all know and loved about those
So it's a lot of, it's very challenging. What about, let's talk about the adults. So we're still hearing instances where teachers are becoming ill.
Yes.
Because the students have been sent to schools ill, and some of the parents willfully send the kids to school, give them two Tylenol, some Robitussin, a Claritin, and say go to school.
Yes,
and they're not testing
work.
Them, and they're spreading the virus. So talk to us about the mental health of the teachers and the administrators. What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, they truly struggle. One of the things that I'm seeing is that it's just a feeling of just being exhausted. It's exhaustion, mental exhaustion. Is probably, I don't know, Phil, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I truly do believe that it's worse than just physical exhaustion. That mental exhaustion is what they're going through. And every day is different. Every single day is different. Teachers having to take other kids from other classrooms because there's not enough coverage. You have a class of 20, you really got your kids going and they're following directions and you have a really good class. And then now you have seven more kids added to your day that you're having to prepare for, that you're not really prepared for. And of course, at that upper level where, you know, you go to your class and now your class has been rerouted to the gym or you're rerouted to a different teacher. And so that inconsistency is not giving our kids the right, that consistency that they need in order to be successful students. And
yeah.
So it definitely is rough.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, that calm voice that you're hearing, that very loving voice, is that of Katrina Hudson, and she works in the office. She's a director, actually,
yes,
at the Office for Student Engagement at Hillsborough County Schools right here in in Tampa, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you drove in for us today.
Yes.
Ooh,
well, this is home for me.
It was a blast.
Yes, Bavard is home for me. So.
You know, one of the things about the public school system that I have found since I've been in the United States and I've been here forever, I find that sometimes we don't treat all the communities the same. It doesn't matter what your zip code is. Every child should have the same opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching what's going on with the substitute teaching. And now my mind is taking that on as well, because they make less than $13 an hour, and I've been told that in some cases, due to COVID or other illnesses, some people substitute teach, and it's kind of more like a babysitter, because
right.
they're not qualified to teach year round.
Right, and that's exactly what's happening, because when you're hiring substitute teachers, that substitute teacher, they're only paid for the time they show up for the kids, and then they are no longer paid after the kid leaves. And so once their class leaves, they don't have that same responsibility. as a certified teacher. And so you have substitutes. Many, you know, you've run across some substitutes that will give of their time, and they will try to, you know, try to take things home and learn, and so they can be a little bit more prepared.
The lesson plan.
Right, and right. To do their lessons and things like that. But for most of them, they don't have that opportunity. And so what they're doing is they're just flying by the seat of their pants many times, because they're not having that time for preparation like certified teachers do. And it's very sad, simply because I know that they're trying to do the very best that they're doing. And the kids, they're seeing different faces. Sometimes every day there's a different substitute in front of them. And it really is not giving them the quality that they deserve. And that's one of the things that, that truly, you know, breaks my heart, is that our kids are not, simply because of what's happening around us in the world, they're not getting, the quality that they truly deserve as students.
Right. And we've talked about the rise in domestic violence during the pandemic. We spoke about the children coming to school with food insecurity, mm-hmm. Due to COVID-19 and the pandemic. What other mental health issues are you all seeing in the school system with our students?
Many of our kids, you know, when they do, you know, we try very hard to make sure that they are wanted. They know that they're wanted on campus. One of our biggest issues in our schools, and it's just not here in Brevard, it's just not here in Florida. I have peers in Arizona, in Texas. I have, you know, they're going through the same things, and it's that conflict resolution. It's the social media issues, where they are combating with other peers because of, you know, something that was posted, or, you know, some type of, some type of post that really just was something at, you know, going at someone, being argumentative about something. Normally when it's girls, sadly, I can almost say it's 100% when it's a girl fights or girl situations, it's at because of a boy, sadly.
My people.
It's the same. Yeah, so my girls, please understand, we got to do better.
Yeah.
But, you know, generally when we work with schools who have difficulties, it generally is a lot of, it stems from social media, sadly, and it's infiltrating our schools and taking over. The amount of time that it takes for a kid to, when they get in trouble, is a lot of time that they're spending out of the classroom. And so when they're not in the classroom, they're not learning. They're sitting outside waiting for, outside of the principal's office or the dean's office, you know, waiting to be spoken to. And so that's time out of class.
Yes, they're pouting, right?
Yes, when you're skipping, that's time out of class.
Well, you know, I heard something this morning that someone was speaking about Reverend Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King. He said that he had believed that strength comes from the heritage of our ancestors, right? So what has happened that today's children don't understand that phrase? I mean, we all have aunties and cousins and grandmas and moms and dads. It doesn't matter at this point who brought you into the world, who carried you for 9 months. Mm-hmm. We have a community. The world is a village. It takes a village, right, to raise
Absolutely.
A child. What has happened in that we are all responsible for the failures of the school system when a child goes to school totally unprepared and hungry and worried? I mean, some of them can't study because they're too hungry. They're not
Absolutely.
Worried about the next meal, where it's coming from.
Absolutely.
Or the lights aren't on at their house.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we also have quite a number of kids who are in foster homes, or, you know, and they don't have, you know, that consistency of an adult. And so they're not, you know, they're in positions where they're not totally focused on their education as well. And so I think a lot of it comes from, you know, our kids, we haven't made them do anything. They and I think, you know, that's definitely, that's self-reflection also.
Yeah.
You know, we have to require more of our kids. They're totally capable. We had chores every Saturday morning. You know, we went to church every Sunday morning. And now you ask those same things of the kids that come through our office, or, you know, when I was a principal, or, you know, in my other years in education, you know, there is a lack of that, that consistency of knowing that.
Well, hey, they just say to the parent, I'm not going to church.
They just say,
I'm not going to temple. I'm not going to mosque, whatever. And the parents can't fight them because they start arguing and the household becomes a battleground.
Absolutely.
And so people walk away because they take the easy road out. Not my mother. She got a belt out.
That's parenting. And
I'm
and
sorry to say, but she did. She did.
Parenting is hard.
Yeah,
parenting is hard. It's an action word. Parenting is an action word.
Yeah.
That means you have to do something.
That's right.
Yes.
Not absolutely. That I'm an advocate for abusing a belt, but back then in Trinidad and Tobago,
I just needed the threat of the teacher belt. I just needed to see the belt.
Yeah,
and that
my
was enough.
Teacher yeah. would hold a finger. Our teachers would hold the fingertips, and we would get the whip. Mm-hmm. Of course, they don't do it. My kids would be mortified if they beat their kids. But I'm just saying, it's like where the lack of discipline at home is seen at work, it's seen in our community, it's seen in our schools, it's seen everywhere. But if you give them a phone, they smile, right? They've got that social media interaction going
absolutely.
On, you know?
And I would also say, because I want to make sure, because I know we just have a few moments left, you know, that mentorship is very important. If you're able to be a mentor to a kid who needs it, you know, and you can spend 30 minutes a week with a kid, it means so much. Because some of our kids, especially our males, they don't have many other males that's in their lives. Normally, if it's a, you know, single family, it is normally a just one mother, and or they're, you know, supported by aunties and not enough uncles and dads, and you know, really need to be involved in our children. And it's not just our boys.
And education, right? Sex education.
Absolutely.
Trade, the military, whichever route you choose, we have to educate ourselves and our communities and our children, because we're seeing too many kids that are being born and there's a lack of parenting, a lack of support system. So educate yourselves in order to bring educated kids into this world.
Absolutely.
And
right?
Even if you don't have kids, if you can big
absolutely.
Sisters, big brothers, all of those organizations.
And Brevard has so
even
many.
Even volunteering at the school.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know what skills, talents, and abilities you have that could influence
Well, I have
child.
To say, once I had a friend whose son was complaining that his school bus had no air conditioning. Mm-hmm. I said, at least you have a school bus.
Absolutely.
We walked 2 or 3 miles in the hot sun to get to school in Trinidad, and we shared books, and we shared uniforms, and we shared things. And nowadays, they're so entitled, they won't sit on a bus with no air conditioning. They have to call mommy and daddy to complain.
Uh-huh.
Get your tail to school on time, and the parents need to do their part. When the teacher has a teacher work day, show up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't even know what grade their child is in, but they want to fight the teachers about wearing a mask and putting a camera in the school to watch man the teachers.
Well,
come
Katrina,
on, we got to do a part.
Thank you so much, Katrina Hudson. Thank you so much for taking your day and spending it with us and educating us about what's going on in our schools and how we can actually be better humans, right? Be better citizens
absolutely.
To our schools and to our teachers.
And respect our teachers
absolutely.
And administrators. And Katrina.
That's right. And Siobhan, thank you so much for sharing your gift about your books. And we will be back next week here on AM 1510 WWBC with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.